matter what people say. Yeah. We got it going on. Yeah. Who cares about what they did?
You know me. I'm the hottest in the street.
WJMS. This is According to RP.
Turn up the volume, kick back, and get raw with us.
From the latest hip-hop beefs to social issues that cripple the black community, all from the perspective of a young, strong black woman.
A strong black woman.
And now your host, Rita.
Welcome back, everyone, for another episode of According to RP on WJMS Radio. It's your girl, Rita Pierre, your host. And as always, I hope you guys are striving, thriving, and surviving in these corona-infested streets. So today is November 1st. It is the start of a whole new month. I do not know where October went. It made an appearance and it left like a thief in the night. But we are now in a new month, which means new opportunities, and we are closer to the end of the year. I don't know about you, but I am hoping that 2021 is a year of blessings, a year of abundant, I don't know, positivity. I'm just hoping that 2021 has a lot of positivity and restoration in store. But either way, today is November 1st, and it's a very, very, very important day. Why? Because it is the birthday of my first and only child, Jediah Glenn. Now, I know he might feel a little embarrassed if he ever hears this, but I'm going to take a little trip down memory lane. Jediah was supposed to be born in January, but instead, as I've noticed over the years of raising him, he could be a little stubborn, and he decided that he was going to enter into the world when he felt like it. And that was November 1st. At 7:20 p.m. on November 1st, my child was born. He's now 14 years old, and he is growing faster than weeds. But I can tell you this, it was very scary times. It was very scary times, very painful times, to be honest. But here we are. Here we are 14 years later. My two-pound preemie baby is now taller than me, although I hate to admit it, he's bigger than me. And he's here ready to make his mark on this world. So happy birthday to my beautiful boy, Jediah. Those of you who are prayer warriors, please intercede for me in prayer, because we know that the teenage life is real. I've already gotten a taste of it. It's only supposed to get worse. So I need all the prayers. All of the prayers. The second thing that is important with this November 1st date is the fact that we are only 21 days away from Sagittarius territory. Sagittarians are probably the best people you'll ever meet. I am a Sagittarian, which is why I always take this opportunity to talk about the greatness of Sagittarians. And we are 21 days away. Anybody who knows anything about a Sagittarian knows that we are proud, and we start with our Sag Nation hashtags the moment 11:59 p.m. drops on, you know, December 22nd. So I know that it might seem disrespectful because we have just entered Scorpio season, but the Scorpios know how I feel about them, unfortunately. But I digress. I will not get into that conversation today. But I am just here to remind you all that Sagittarius season is upon us. It's upon us. Be ready for greatness. Either way, today we have a very, very special show. We have two amazing guests by the name of Nakia and Lawrence Ali. They are going to come on and talk about building with your significant other, right? A lot of times when we hear married people talk, I've never been married, disclaimer, so I am not an expert. However, I am a spectator, and I think I've been around enough married people, and I've watched enough reality TV shows to be kind of qualified as an amateur expert, right? Either way, when you hear about married couples, you, for at least for me, I hear that living separate lives and doing and having your own separate entities and separate adventures and separate businesses and whatnot seems to be the key to a strong marriage. However, in today's interview, you are going to kind of hear the opposite. So these individuals are going to talk about how they've built their lives together. Essentially, they work in the same place, 9 to 5. They've come together and created legacy together for themselves and their children by creating the Ali Group, which is a real estate agency. And you're going to hear about all the many other things that they've built and created together. And I feel like it's so beautiful, especially in this time when we're talking about being Black, Black legacy, Black love, generational wealth, just to hear that you can actually be happy in a marriage where you see each other every day and you work together every day. It's like quite a conundrum, but in listening to them talk about it, I'm like, wow, these things do exist. So you definitely want to keep it locked to hear about their journey, but also to hear about a book that they co-authored together, the HBCU Experience, North Carolina A&T University, second edition. And I mean, it's funny because we've had a couple of people on this platform talk about their involvement in this book, but I really feel like you guys are really gonna appreciate this couple and their perspective on life, on marriage, on education, etc. So again, make sure that you keep it locked. So before we get into the preliminaries that will then be before the meat of the show, I do want to just make this disclaimer once again. We are 2 days away from elections, people. 2 days away from elections. And we need to be out there and we need to vote. I know that a lot of people from the Black community, because I've been talking about this over the last couple of months, feel some type of way about the candidates, feel some type of way about people urging the Black vote without any type of action items, you know, for the Black agenda. I understand that. I feel you. I get it. However, I need to remind you all that there is a larger objective at hand here, and that's get Trump out of the White House. 2 days away from the polls, 2 days away from making history, right? We need to remove this oligarch, this evil oligarch from our country, from our White House, right? And again, I get it. I so get it. I get where you guys are coming from, right? It's hard. It's hard to sit out here and choose a candidate that is not 100% your favorite, right? And we're not even sure exactly what he's going to do. But guys, we know who Trump is. We know what he's capable of, and we know where this country will end up if we have another 4 years of this racist white supremacist leading this country, right? And so with 2 days left, I am urging you guys to get out and exercise your right to vote. And I'm going to qualify that statement with this. It's not just, I'm not just telling you to go out and vote, because many people are just saying, get out and vote, get out and vote, go out and vote. I'm telling you to go out and vote, but I also am telling you to empower yourselves and your communities. Get out and let's do some dirty work. Your communities need you, right? Your communities need resources. Your communities need assistance. Don't just get out and vote, but get out and vote and also be a participant in your communities, not just civically, but literally, like, get your hands dirty. There are a lot of groups out there that are starting to really take this to heart, and they are cleaning up their streets, literally brooms, shovels, cleaning up the trash. There are groups that are out here organizing programs for the young children within their community, realizing that there is a lack, right? So they are doing that. And so, yes, go out and vote, but do your part. Don't sit around and complain that, oh, I'm being asked to vote, but what have they done for us, when you're not doing anything for your own damn self and you're not doing anything for your community, the community that you claim is not part of the agenda. You haven't even done not a nan for your community. So if you're going to sit back and complain about what's on the Black agenda and what's not being on the Black agenda and using that as a reason for you not to go out and vote, you're sadly mistaken. And it's people like you that are, in a sense, destroying the communities, right? You are, in a sense, destroying, you know, what can be, because you're out here spreading propaganda, spreading negativity, preventing people from exercising the rights that our ancestors died for, literally, right? And I know I hear this all the time. Well, what has voting gotten Black people? Well, it's gotten us a lot. It might not be what you want to see. It might not be to the extent that you want to see it, but marginal steps do count. Marginal steps are important. Baby steps are important. Sure, by 2020, we would have loved this world to be kumbaya and for everyone to be hand in hand and for racism to be non-existent and for pay equity to be where it's at, you know, but unfortunately, that's not the case. But I don't think any of us could really sit back and say that nothing has changed, right? Nothing has changed. I think that would be silly for us to even say. We are clearly not where we were like 60 years ago, 50 years ago, 100 years ago. Are we kind of close? Probably, but we're not 100% there, which means there has been some sort of change. And you guys can fight me if you want. You could at me if you want. I really don't care. But what I'm saying is this, is that if you are seeking change and you are complaining that nothing is being done, why don't you be the change that you want to see in this world? Why don't you be the change that you want to see in your society? And why don't you be the change that you want to see on your block? People, there is so much riding on this election. It might not affect you personally, but I'm sure it affects your neighbor. I'm sure it affects members of your church congregation. I'm sure it affects people within your children's school. You can't just think about yourself when it comes to this. You have to think about the whole. And again, I'm going to stress this. You cannot sit here and complain about nothing has ever worked for Black people and the Black agenda is not being addressed when you yourself have done nothing to push the needle forward. So with that being said, get out and vote. And now we are on to our preliminaries. So it is now time for the Urban Dictionary word or phrase of the week.
Do you understand the words that are coming out of my mouth?
May I have the definition?
What does skeet skeet mean?
What's on fleek?
Can you use it in a sentence?
And it's gonna be lit.
Major key.
It's time for the Urban Dictionary word or phrase of the week.
So this week's Urban Dictionary word or phrase of the week is Gen C. The generation born after January 1st, 2020, preceding Gen Z, named after the viral coronavirus. This generation is destined for a life of turmoil and confusion. The social distancing COVID-19 brought on us will likely make this generation even more socially awkward than Gen Z. They've been born into a world tangled with problems and chaos. So let's do our best to welcome them with open arms 6 feet away. Example, those Gen Z kids seem awfully weird and quiet. Coronavirus ruined those kids. You know, I'm really mad that there's already another generation. I'm still trying to catch up with this Generation Z. So now apparently there's a Generation C. This is a Urban Dictionary phrase, so we're going to have to fact check it at least 3 times. But let's just say there is a Generation C. A part of me does feel bad for these kids because they are going to be entered into a world where things are upside down. But I think the same can be said for generations past, right? With people who were born during the eras of World War II, World War I, you know, the race riots, civil rights movement. I feel like that's just what it is, unfortunately. I mean, this pandemic is definitely a game changer in so many levels. And it will be interesting to see socially how our kids adapt and move forward with all of this. But either way, I'm actually not mad at this definition this week. It actually has some teeth. So with that being said, that is the word of the week. So now we are on to one of my favorite segments of this show. It is now time for the big up of the week.
Watch it.
And you feel big up, big up. All of the woman them big up, big up. All of the girl them big up, big up. All of the woman them big up, big up.
So this week's Big Up of the Week goes to all of the organizations, political offices, grassroots companies, organizations, and people that have continued to provide fresh foods to families during this crazy time of the pandemic that has led us to an economic crisis, right? I mean, the other day I was on a call with a woman who does community work on a high level, and she was talking about the food shortages within our communities and that food is actually a scarcity. And fresh produce in particular are harder to obtain now because, I mean, prices have skyrocketed, and especially in these spaces around Brooklyn and even other areas throughout the boroughs that are considered food deserts, it's been very hard to obtain certain types of foods and to be able to provide them to these people. And so I just really want to shout out these organizations that are really committed to providing food to those who are less fortunate. You know, many of us are in very fortunate spaces and we don't even notice that there is a food shortage. We might notice that things are a little more expensive, but to think that we don't have access to fresh foods or to food period, like that's not something that really comes to a lot of our minds on a day-to-day basis, right? And so I think that the fact that there are organizations and individuals and offices that are dedicated to providing, you know, such a necessary resource to people is amazing. And a lot of times you see, you know, especially some political offices, they'll do it once, right? You'll see one food giveaway, two food giveaways. But a lot of these offices have been giving food away consistently since the pandemic. And when I say food, I'm talking about fresh fruit, like vegetables, you know, and fruits and things of that nature. So really, really big shout out to them. I know Councilwoman Farrah Louise's office has been doing a great job partnering with different organizations throughout Brooklyn, particularly in the East Flatbush section, giving out boxes of fresh food. I've seen these boxes with my own eyes, so I know that the stuff is actually fresh. So again, you know, just big up to these organizations that are doing that. You know, the access to healthy food should not be a luxury, right? It should be a right. We all should have a right to not just food, but to healthy food. So big up to all of you who are doing what you can to feed our New Yorkers. So with every high, you guys know that there is a low. And this week's low, actually last night's low, goes to all of these parents who had their children out in these streets, these corona-infested streets with no masks on, trick-or-treating. Now, I understand that Halloween is a very important holiday to many. It's never been important to me because I am a Christian and I have been told since I was a kid that Halloween was the devil's holiday. But I digress. We're in a pandemic. I think there are certain things we can just say, maybe next year, maybe next time. Now, for the people who were very safe about it, who organized maybe with some of their neighbors or, you know, rented out a community center. I know there were some groups that did some stuff in some parks or whatever the case is on a very controlled basis. That, okay, fine. Maybe, right? Because at the end of the day, I mean, I guess we don't want to ruin everything for these kids. Even though we know, on many cases, Halloween is for adults, not the kids. Because the adults be wilding out more so than the kids. All you got to do is give these kids candy and put some costumes on them and they're fine. You don't have to leave the house with them. But either way, but I saw, not just with my own two eyes, but even on social media, just parents rolling around these streets with their kids with no mask. It's the no mask part that really got me. Maybe if you had a mask on these kids, I wouldn't feel compelled to make this statement. But no masks in these streets. And we know from Dr. Fauci and others that these kids are like the carriers of this coronavirus. They're the carriers and they're the spreaders of this virus, which is why a lot of these schools are still not open. Right? So I find it to be very irresponsible. Because it's the same parents who want to send their kids to school to infect not just the teachers, but other kids. Like this, and now it's all making sense to me why a lot of jurisdictions choose to continue the remote learning. And for New York, I think that if Halloween did not serve as a prime example of why these schools need to be shut down until the new year, I mean, I don't understand. Clearly, the parents can't be trusted. They have these kids out here in these streets catching the Rona and spreading the germs. I was just baffled. Again, maybe if I had seen masks, I would not feel so compelled to make this statement. But these children were out here with no masks on, trick-or-treating at strangers' houses, interacting with people. And I'm not even sure who's worse. The parents who were bringing the kids out to trick-or-treat or the people who were opening their doors to give out candy. I don't even know. Either way, that's the womp womp of the week. And we are now on to the meat of the show. All right, everyone, I'm here with my very special guests, Nakia and Ali. Nakia and Ali, please say hello.
Hello, hello. How are you?
Hello, everyone. This is Ali.
Oh, man. So thank you guys for coming on the show. I really, you know, I don't tend to have couples on. I think you're the second couple I've ever had on the show. So it'll be very interesting.
I'm honored to be here. Thank you so much for having us.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome. And so I was looking through your bios, both of your bios, and you guys are some very interesting people, but I don't want to keep it to myself. I want to give you guys an opportunity to share with the audience a little bit about who you are, what you do, and where you're from. So as we are a ladies first platform, Nakia.
Yes, yes. So I am Nakia. I live in the Washington, D.C. metropolitan area, actually born and raised, specifically in PG County, Maryland. I currently work as a branch chief for the federal government. I'm the branch chief of investigative analysis, and I'm also a CEO of my own company that I share with my husband here, called the Ali Group, which is a real estate management and investment firm. So hopefully we can get more into that a little later. But I'm also an alumni of North Carolina A&T State University, Aggie Pride. And I am a mom of two beautiful little girls, Logan, who will be 8 soon, and Lennox, who will be 5. So they are my greatest achievement and accomplishment. And I'm just happy that I can, you know, be here to talk about what we're doing as a family and as a couple for those two little girls. So yeah, that's me.
All right. And Mr. Ali.
Wife is being really humble. She owns and founded her own hair company, Next Ali.
Oh, wait, what?
You're on the side too. I forgot that part.
Did not see that in the bio. We gotta talk about that.
Yes.
That's what husbands are for.
Yeah. She also founded a youth organization for females called Love.
Yes. Yeah. After I graduated college, North Carolina A&T, I came back home and founded and ran a mentoring program in the Prince George's County schools, public school system for about 4 years for high school students. And it was called Love, Ladies of Valor and Excellence.
Oh, well, we got to talk about that. You're sitting here, you're holding back.
Well, my name is Ali, and I am a husband, a father of two, a man of God, a senior auditor at the Department of Labor Office of Inspector General with my wife, and a founder of the Ali Group, which is a property management company. I went to A&T.
Yes, we met at A&T. I mean, it sounds really crazy. Like, it's hard to kind of really individualize it because we met in college at the tender age of 18, 19 years old. So a lot of us, you know, we pretty much grew up together. And surprisingly, you know, we also work for the same federal agency So we work together.
Yeah.
We have our business together, and obviously, we, you know, we live our lives together. So we share a lot.
Yeah. While I was at T, I founded an organization called Men of Valor and Excellence.
Yes. I stole it from him.
we didn't steal it, man. We vibed off each other.
Yeah.
That's how it happened. And then when I graduated, I started an organization with my line brother, Curtis Walls, an organization called Taking Initiative, Moving Efficiently, which really played off the platform of Move.
Mm-hmm.
Here we are today, you know, still thriving 16, 17 years later.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Well, that's beautiful because we don't see a lot of that happening, especially amongst the young, you know, young people.
Black love is important. Yeah. It's real. Yeah.
No, we really think that's honestly, you know, if we're being really transparent, it's one of the reasons why we're kind of really entertaining, you know, having, you know, just speaking out because we're feeling like in this moment that we're in, we're really feeling like there's a need to really express and project Black love and all of its essence in trials and tribulations.
Mm-hmm. And success.
And successes, right?
Yes, yes. And I definitely agree with you. There definitely needs to be more of a showcase of that because it's not, you know, we're not really seeing it on the TV, you know, but when I was growing up, at least I was able to see Black love on TV with, you know, The Cosby Show and Fresh Prince and things like that. Now, yeah. You know, we have Love and Hip Hop. So we're not seeing too much love going on and excellence.
Exactly.
So I am interested in knowing how you two came together to form the Ali Group, as you both seem to have like an analyst and investigative background working for the, you know, United States government. How did you guys come to the, I guess, conclusion that we would like to start a real estate management investment company?
My husband was an accounting major and he is an auditor. So he's all about the numbers.
Mm-hmm.
So he came to me one day and was like, we can pay down our student loan debt if we move out of our house into your mother's basement and we'll just rent the house out. And so I said, okay. And that's what we did. So we actually kind of stumbled into property management by moving out of our own home and, you know, we had 10 tenants in there. We managed it. And although it wasn't a cakewalk, we were pretty good at it. And we had, you know, we were successful at it. So we decided that, well, hey, this is something that we could do. And it can be a part of our desire to create generational wealth for our family.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. If I can just, you know, echo what you said and just the mere fact what she said when she said okay, I think that's important because that's a crazy idea. Uproot. You just bought your own townhome.
We were only in there for like 3 years. Our daughter was 6 months old.
Right. And without hesitation, she said, let's do it. And I think that's really important because that's really an example of how we've been able to operate, because that's the mm-hmm. question. Like, how have we been able to do this? It's just been, you know, great articulation and projection of what we wanted our vision to be. And I think through that, we were able to understand that we have the same end goal and being open to having many ways of getting there
mm-hmm.
and trusting one another, because in the past, we've had examples how to trust one another
mm-hmm.
and carrying that to making that decision was so easy. Man, when we did it, we actually end up accomplishing our goal a lot shorter than what we intended it to be. So it was pretty cool.
So, you know, we did the property management of our own property for about 3 or 4 years. And then during that time, we acquired more properties to manage of other owners, and it just worked for us. We were able to create a team and we strategize and we met often, and we both have unique skill sets that allow us to, you know, be successful and work together. It's not always easy. You know, you have to take the wife hat off sometimes and be like, look, you know, this is this and this is that, but we're able to do, that, you know, respectfully, because, you know, we've set boundaries.
No, I mean, the boundaries piece is key, right? Early on in our relationship, I'll never forget this. And I'm being transparent, right? But So early in our relationship, Nakia cursed at me. I'm like, whoa.
I was coming from a situation where I was, you know,
And honestly, I was coming from a situation where I recognize as a male what that does to my ego. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, me knowing that, I really just was like, if she cursed at me. And I was like, all right, listen, this is what we're not going to do. We're going to make sure we respect each other at all times. And I think that foundation and her buying into that created us an ability to work with one another in a respectful manner, business-wise, as well as
in our marriage.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's key, because a lot of times I've heard from just individuals just like, oh, you know, we started this business together, you know, as a married couple, and now our marriage is on the rocks. You know, because I guess they didn't anticipate, you know, maybe the different personalities, or I don't know what it is. But, you know, I hear all the time as well, too, just in general, you know, it's just be very careful when you're working with friends or family members, anybody you have a relation with. Because I guess there's this idea that, you know, your working personality is not the same as your, I guess, everyday non-working personality. But I love to see how, you know, when we think about marriage and partnership, it should be in all aspects of life, right?
Yeah.
And how you guys are able to come together and own and operate and manage a successful business together. I think it's just beautiful.
Well, I was just going to say, when you said not including friends and family and things, you know, one point we did have, you know, other folks involved, and we learned that it just created an environment for us to learn how to work even better in, you know, within ourselves, because we had to, I can't even really all get into it, but it just, you know, it just created an environment for me and him to trust each other even more in business. So when we were able to separate ourselves from, you know, other business partners, it was like hitting the ground running, really. We knew how to operate. You know, I knew what would get him thinking and get him going if I, you know, about certain things. And he knew that I'm the executor. You know, he's like, okay, if I come to Nakia with a plan, or, you know, I know that she can execute. We just were able to identify our strengths and really push each other to, you know, exude those strengths and just to make our business be what it is today. And, you know, when it comes to business, for at least for us, you know, you can't have your heart in your sleeves. Like, it's real, because it's for us, it's our legacy, it's our generational wealth for our family. So, and not only that, it's called the Ali Group. It's our name. It's our, you know, so how we conduct business is very important to us, and we just respect it and respect each other within it. So.
Okay. So now, question I do have, though, you know, a lot of individuals who have their, I guess I call them like the side businesses, right? Mm-hmm. Is there a point where you both are planning to take the Ali Group full time and both of you then leave your government jobs?
So I am so glad you brought that up, because I almost forgot my comment I was about to say before that, because you said a lot. And it was great.
I'm sorry.
No, it was great. And I didn't have much to say.
I was in my bag.
It was, yeah, you were. Yeah, but no, to that point, right, you know, we work together, you know, and that's a lot in itself. I mean, before COVID, we would drive in to work together, right? We would leave together. But we would never see each other during lunch. We would make sure to create that space. So when the kid was talking about was really navigating within ourselves to have that cohesiveness and that energy. And so anyway, to get to your question, which is, do we ever, you know, see us getting out of this, right? Doing this full time. I wanted to say the reason why we always are able to be evenly yoked in our marriage and in our business is because at the end of the day, I think what we always know is family comes first. Mm-hmm. God comes first. Our marriage is first. So really, you know, it just so happens that because of who we are and the boundaries we set, all of that just flows over into the Ali group. And we're grateful for that. But we never lose sight of what's important. And I think that in itself allows those other things to happen where we can say, all right, we can work together and can say, okay, I feel comfortable with making this decision to leave, because Nakia talks all the time about.
Listen, I'm going to tell you something. We signed a good contract that can cover my salary. Like, I'm good. If I could work full time at building something significant for my family, I would. Mm-hmm. Not saying that I can't do that with my federal career alone, but it's just something about being able to have your name on and your hustle and your drive mm-hmm. on something that your kids can, you know, live off of and your grandkids can live off of.
What I do want to say about this too, right, is because I think oftentimes I think we do want to acquire our own business and our own company to create that wealth. And we think the only way to do that is through having our own business.
And it's not.
And I have to be honest with you, you know, there are a lot of us who are creating massive wealth through their regular 9-to-5.
Yeah.
You know, and there are some of us who are able to retire at much earlier ages, you know, to do what they actually really want to do because they were able to be so successful in their careers. So I just wanted to highlight that perspective too, to say, for me, you know, I don't really know where God is going to lead me. Right. But mm-hmm. I do know I'm a great professional. And so I am going to be, I'm going to ride that horse, you know, because that's really feeding the other animal that I want to feed. So, yeah. You know, it just works. It's a beautiful balance for me. I can't really answer that question. Honestly, I'm still.
Yeah, it works until it doesn't.
Oh, man, it works until it doesn't. Yeah, absolutely. So
I actually really appreciate that point, because I think that a lot of people have been made to feel like they're not doing enough with their lives, or that, you know, because some people truly do love their 9-to-5 job, yeah. You know, yeah. And they're good at it. And some people are making a significant amount of money doing what they love, what they went to school for. But there is this idea that, you know, you're never gonna make it. You're never gonna break out of or create any type of generational wealth if you are only working for the man. So it's like there's this idea that everybody has to have a business in order for them to truly make it in this country, in this society.
Yeah, but Rita, you said something that really made me think about something, which was working for the man. But mm-hmm. What we really don't realize is we have the power to say who we are working for.
All in the mind,
you know, because yeah. I never thought of it that way. When I remember when I walked into my, it's a cubicle. When I first walked into my cubicle, I said, I will not allow this cubicle to define me. Mm-hmm. I just, you know what I mean? Because you walk into it and you really think that they're like, I'm boxed in this little space. Mm-hmm. And the reality is you have to really think to yourself, no, I'm not. You know what I'm saying? You have to really, really quickly define like why you're working, who you're working for. So,
yeah, I think that's a good point. And it is a vocabulary thing, right? Because it's so easy to just think in a particular way, like, okay, well, I'm not working, you know, because I'm not working for myself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, then I have to be a slave to somebody else.
Yes.
But I do like that point that you made, because I know a lot of people who love what they do and they're making more money than I would probably ever make on a side business with their room, and they love it. You know, they truly love it. So I think that is a very important point to make when we think about, you know, sometimes the side hustle is the side hustle.
Yeah, to be honest,
it's okay.
Yeah. And to be honest, we actually like struggled on this a little bit, you know, really just trying to decide, like, you know, we've been working in our careers for 13 years now, like, and we've been successful. Like, we're good at what we do. Like, do we need to do the Ali group? Do we need to have to come home and have, you know, extra office hours just for us to do this side business? And we honestly were like, no, we don't need to, you know, we don't, you know, that income is extra. We don't need it. And we don't need to be tired sending emails late at night, you know. We don't need to do that. And honestly, we decided, you know what, we're going to chill. We're just going to focus on our careers and we're just going to focus on family. And I think that lasted for maybe two, three weeks, yeah. Maybe. And it was just like, it just kept,
I think that was the entrepreneur retreat that every entrepreneur realizes they need, you know, because sometimes, you know how it is with it. You can get caught up in the grind. And you can really just, sometimes you lose sight of your target.
Yep.
And it really took COVID for us to kind of, you know, whew, take a second to breathe.
Yeah.
Self-reflect and get our targets realigned again. And it just took off once we did.
Yeah. I feel like COVID really solidified things for a lot of people with respect to just, you know, business, life, everything.
Yeah, for sure.
So now, Ali, I know that aside from, you know, your professional 9-to-5 job being an analyst, an auditor, outside of the Ali group, you are also a community advocate in a sense, because of the work that you're doing with Move. So I kind of want to get into, how did you start Move and, you know, what type of work are you doing with this organization?
So, I've been involved in community advocacy for a while, right? Mm-hmm. I think what that stemmed from was coming from, you know, I was born in Southeast DC and I moved to PG when I was in the third grade. So I was raised in Prince George's County in Brentwood, Maryland, which is, let's just say it was a typical, you know, single family, African-American male situation, right? And I think we really know what that is. And for me, because I was really such a self-reflective kid, and I think a lot of kids really are, I was kind of trying to figure out, like, who I was going to be and who I was going to become. So, like, when I got to college, it just so happened I got there gracefully. Right. And then when I got there, I was just like, all right, well, I can't stop now, you know. And I really knew there were a lot of people like me, a lot of males like me who probably felt the same way, who at some point realized, like, oh, I'm here now. There's much more to obtain. Let's finish the job. And that really just resonated with my soul and my spirit. And I wanted to make sure that all my friends and all my friends' friends and whoever else just wanted to be in the organization. And men of valor and excellent valor, meaning integrity. I got that from a spiritual passage. But I really wanted us to, and the acronym is MOVE. I really wanted us to move in the right way and finish the job. And because you get a lot of brothers who they get there and they think they made it, right? And then you don't realize, like, oh, it's so much more. And if we're talking about the HBCU, you know, you can go to an HBCU and get swallowed up. Mm-hmm. You know, whole and not finish the job. So anyway, I really wanted to make sure that people who came from where I come from, you know, have a good perspective on what finishing the job could do. And I've just been doing that type of work, you know, since 2003 on to even now as an AAU basketball coach dealing with 15, 16, 17 year old kids. And their journey in that way. I mean, I got a kid who's 14 and got a baby on the way, you know?
Wow.
So again, I got to make sure he finishes the job despite, you know what I'm saying? His circumstances. So anyway, I can go forever about, you know that, but you know, that's just what I do. That's what I love to do because I know how it feels to be lost you know, as an African-American male in this particular society that we live in, and really trying to figure out how to finish what I really want to finish.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's really important, because a lot of times, you know, the kids will start, but they'll lose their way because they don't have enough, I would say, mentors. They don't have enough guidance to really teach them how to follow through. You know, unfortunately, a lot of us come from either, you know, the quote unquote broken homes or single parent homes. And even if you are in a two parent home, you know, there's a lot of things that can contribute to, you know, children learning certain, you know, processes and learning certain coping mechanisms and or not learning certain, you know, skills into how to actually, you know, start and finish a project, start and finish, you know, what you set out to do. So I think it's really important, you know, that there are more groups like yours that focus on, you know, particularly the young men, because we see that more so in them, this kind of flightiness and inability to really stay focused.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I know that, I mean, since your husband let me know, since you didn't let me know, Nakia, that you also had an organization helping young women, I would like to learn a little bit more about that, because I think, you know, focusing on the youth needs to be a priority of all of ours, because they're our next generation. And with everything going on in this, you know, society, like it's more critical now for us to focus on them.
Absolutely. So, so my organization was called Love, which was Ladies in Valor and Excellence. And it was something that I did post-college, but particularly for high school girls in Prince George's County public schools. So I'm not running that organization anymore, just because I had kids and life happened. But for 4 years, myself and a few of my really good girlfriends, we worked really hard at putting a program and a curriculum together for girls at high school. And we met with them twice a month, and we talked about different topics that they felt was important to them. We talked about, it was more like preparedness stuff. For me, it was kind of like the same thing with Ali, just wanting to make sure they felt prepared for what was next, and to let them know that, you know, it was okay to have these conversations and to have healthy conversations and to talk about what you're experiencing or what you have anxiety about. Because once you hit that campus, wherever you go, whether it's a HBCU or a PWI or community college, I mean, it's there's a lot of expectation, and then there's a lot to be done. So, you know, my goal was to, you know, reach the girls on the high school level, and just to get them comfortable with what, you know, they felt like was coming ahead for them.
And I think for also what it was for me was a lot of conviction and giving back, because I knew I didn't get where I got by myself.
Mm-hmm.
So when you look back on like certain pieces of your life and flashes that of people who impacted your life, even momentarily, and then you also mix that up with, you know, the spiritual realm of God and realizing that, wow, man, like I didn't do this by myself.
Mm-hmm.
Convicted to make sure that what you have gathered through your experience in your life, you are able to give back to somebody that is so much more younger than you. And you become intrigued with saying, well, let me see, if I give you this nugget, if I keep pouring on it, what would you do with it, young brother, young female, young sister? And so that becomes an obsession.
Yeah.
And you know what I mean? It just is.
And we're and to his point, we're both products of like the Boys and Girls Club. You know what I mean? Like, you know, like I did everything in the Boys and Girls Club. He did everything in the Boys and Girls Club. So it's just like, thank God that we were able to, you know, come back to our community and give back in a way it was poured into us.
Like that I love hearing stories like that, because, you know, oftentimes, you know, life gets in the way, we get busy, and, you know, the time, I guess, there's not enough time to allocate to the give back. But it's, you know, and that's going to be, that's constant, right? Because we're going to be consistently and constantly recreating ourselves and elevating. But it's always important that, you know, we find some time to give back to the communities, especially when you're, like you guys said, like you guys are products of people pouring into you. So it's just keeping that cycle going.
Yeah.
Rita, I also think it's important to even if you feel like you're not directly giving back, to working towards being a place of refuge for the next generation, right? And making sure that when it's time for your name to be called on by those younger brothers and sisters, that you have a place for them to come to, and you have vision and you have ideas and you have opportunities for them to take on. And I say that to say that if you're not out there directly,
like,
you know,
grassroots,
just, yeah, you can also, you know, make sure that your vision encompasses the brothers that are about to ask you. Because listen, think about this, man. There are a lot of young brothers who, because of the moment that we're in, are making some really horrible decisions, or really some good decisions, right? Mm-hmm. And they're going to be impacted some way, right? If let's say, for example, if you're riding, right, and let's say a young brother gets put in jail, now he has a record because he was just fighting for the cause.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I want to be a company where I can take that brother and understand his story and say, don't worry, I got you. You know what I mean? So that's what I'm saying. Like, if you're not out there on the streets doing what you're doing, or you can definitely be setting yourself up to make sure that you can
accept another way.
Right.
Exactly. Exactly. So now I know you both have referenced this A&T, right? I'm assuming, a little bit of research here, that this is North Carolina A&T University. And I believe this is where the both of you met. And I know that there is a book that you both have contributed to called, and I'm going to get the entire name here, North Carolina A&T University Second Edition.
Yes.
And this is with the HBCU experience. And so I am interested, because I know that you both have separate chapters in this book. One, I want to get your individual journeys to HBCU, how you guys arrived at this decision that you wanted to attend an HBCU. And then if you guys can each just give me just a little snippet of your chapter in the book.
Oh, okay.
Time. I'm gonna start with Ali. I like to be equal opportunity.
Okay. That's a resounding concept. We want to make sure we take into November.
Yes, exactly.
But all right. So for me, I did not start off at A&T. I actually was up in close to New York, right, in Fairfield University in Connecticut. On a football scholarship. If you know anything about Fairfield, Connecticut, it was the second richest county in the nation at the time I went. And it was a challenge for me, being a brother, coming from where I was coming from. I'll give you an example, because we're going to be transparent and candid, because we're in a very historical moment. I would walk down the campus, like Main Street, and I would hear people say, go back to Africa. And this is 2002. Mm-hmm. And I'm a student athlete. I'm here, you know, you would think you would get some type of recognition of being an athlete, but they didn't care. They didn't care. And as a young African-American male who was still trying to figure out who he was, I quickly got put in a dark place and lost. And so as I was trying to find my way out, and this is going to sound funny, Drumline came out.
Oh.
And I swear to you not, I had visited A&T on a college tour back when I was 16. But as a 16-year-old young male, I was not focused on the college tour. And so Drumline came out, and I was like, wait a minute. There's a whole college experience waiting for somebody like me. And I just got super intrigued. And I forgot for a moment that I used to love the different world. And, you know, Dwayne Wayne was my man. So I was trying to, I completely pivoted. I knew I only applied to one school and it was A&T. A&T provided every single opportunity for me to, and I took it by the horns and I ran with it. And and you're here, you're going to hear, you know, the title of my chapter in the book is, you know, She Saved Me. And, you know, it talks about so many ways how I was saved while I was at A&T, but it's been a blessing, man. I'm happy to be alumni.
Okay. And Sister Nakia?
So I swear we didn't make any of this up, but I'm also a transfer student.
Oh, wow.
So I went to a small college in Southern Virginia and hated it. I was completely miserable and cried almost every day second semester of my freshman year. And I actually applied to A&T coming out of high school and did not get in. So when I was at this other school, I just sat up one night and was like, I'm going to apply again. Mm-hmm. And I applied again and got into A&T. And I mean, the moment I hit campus, I felt like it was like the puzzle that was missing, you know, it just felt like the perfect fit. And literally the first week on campus was freshman week. And that was the week I met my husband.
Oh, wow.
We met freshman week of, it's technically, you know, we both are transfer students and, you know, they don't take all your credits all the time. So we're kind of like freshmen all over again. So we had to do the, you know, the traditional freshman week, like, you know, the real freshmen were doing. And we met there and had an amazing interaction and conversation for about 3 hours standing and talking, and then didn't talk to each other for a whole year later after that for some odd reason. But yeah, so A&T has been an amazing experience for me. My best friends, you know, are my college friends. My husband is my college sweetheart. I was a student athlete. I cheered while I was there. I won 3 MEAC championships while I was there.
Okay.
You know, Delta Sigma Theta Sorority Incorporated. So everything that I could have wanted to experience, I was able to do that. And for me, there was really no other option. I mean, I attended a predominantly black public school system here in Maryland. And that was just kind of my comfort zone.
Okay.
So I knew that I wanted to just continue that feeling. I wasn't ready for the shock value. I wanted to stay amongst my own. And A&T just really was exactly what I wanted it to be and needed it to be.
Hey, Retha, can I elaborate on that perspective?
Yes.
So we really have come to an agreement in terms of, you know, what we realize a young African American needs early on before they take on the world, which is they need that affirmation before they're thrust upon, you know, a society that doesn't really majority looks like them. So for me, it's like, you know, now my perspective is this, like you need to go to an HBCU because it's there that you're going to really be able to get poured into and define who you are. And it's going to empower you and create such an armor to be able to take all of the hits that you're about to take on when you get out there. And you'll be so confident about who you are and where you came from that even some of the things that are going to be thrown your way, you'll kind of like smirk and laugh at and continue to push through. Now, I can tell you, had I stayed at the institution that I was at, I'm gonna tell you something, man. I would probably be really, really lost and really in trying to figure out who I am and what I want to provide to.
You would have took a little longer,
man. Listen,
yeah.
No, let's be honest with you, man. I think we don't put enough value on the fact that yeah, we can say at the end of the day, I am who I am. I was gonna always be that, but let's not make no mistake in the power of
experiences.
Yeah. and how they can really pivot you.
And mold you.
And so I think it's important, man, that, you know, you get fed into first before you go out there.
Yeah. I totally agree. Especially, I think, in this day and age, with everything that's going on right now, I think it's really important for, you know, people of color to be around people of color. And I think to get quality education that teaches you about who you are, as well as prepare you for whatever industry you're willing, you know, you're wanting to get into. So I didn't go to HBCU. I'm a PWI girl. I was lucky enough, though, to go to a school that had a really great black student body. So I didn't feel as if, you know, I'm Haitian American. I grew up around immigrants my entire life. So I didn't feel, you know, a disconnect. But, you know, just hearing some of the stories from you all who attended HBCUs, and I have a lot of friends as well too who attended HBCUs. It's just great. It's a great experience.
Yeah, it's like a cult. We know, it's no matter what's, because it's, you know, it's a handful of HBCUs, and it's like, even, you know, everybody reps their school individually, but mm-hmm. as a whole collective, you know, it's a family within that too.
Yeah, Rita, yeah. you better represent. You're not Haitian American. I know you're a Haitian family.
We're proud people, right?
Because for me, I'm Nigerian. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I'm Nigerian American, but yeah, I'm Nigerian. So I definitely resonate with what you're saying in terms mm-hmm. of like having trying to define yourself and like redefine yourself twice. Mm-hmm. You're black. And then you like, you Asian Americans. So it's so important to make sure that people like us get those type of affirmation and comfort mm-hmm. very early on.
Exactly. Exactly. I definitely agree with you. I'm glad I saw the toot nip. I was like, I feel like I know. But you know.
You know where you at? You in New York, man.
I was like, I'm like, I feel like maybe I could ask him for some jello fries. Oh man. So I don't want to lose this opportunity in asking you both to share your social media handles, because you guys have been amazing guests, and I know right now people are really interested in real estate, and I definitely want you guys to be able to share, you know, how people can contact you in the event that somebody's listening. They're like, we want to talk to this Ali group. We want to talk to these people. So how can we get in contact with the both of you?
So I can be reached via my personal Instagram page, which is Nix Ali, NixAlli. We also have the Ali Group, LLC, that's on Instagram as well. Our website is www.theAliGroupLLC.com. Mm-hmm. And yeah.
Yeah, and don't forget her hair page.
Oh, yes.
Let me give that hair page, girl.
You are ridiculous. It be popping.
Listen, your cheerleader said to give that hair page.
So if you're looking for a braider in the DMV area, my Instagram is @hairbynixali.
Okay. I'm glad you specified, because I have a lot of friends in the DMV, and I've actually gotten my hair done out there before. So it's not so far fetched that I'll take that trip to come get my hair braided. So
check the IG, I promise you. And listen, if you don't like it, it's on us.
You see, that's the type of money back guarantee I like to hear. Where can we get this book?
So go ahead.
So you can get the book at Amazon, or okay. You can go at any of our handles and we'll give out the information. Again, my handle is @TheNobleOne, and the one is not traditional O-N-E, it's W-O-N. And then, yeah, man, that's just what it is, man. We just want to give out love and light to anybody who is interested in pursuing this marriage thing. As a married couple, as a business couple, and anything else, man, that we can really feel like that God wants to pour into people, man. So, yeah, man, just holler at us.
Yeah, I mean, you guys are definitely inspirational. You know, I'm not married yet, but I'm like, when I do, I definitely want to holla at you guys, find out how. What's the secret? Okay, well, I mean, this was just such a great conversation. I don't want to end it, but I know that after a while, people get antsy.
Yeah.
The attention spans get antsy, but I definitely want to have you guys back on the show. Definitely want to follow up with a lot of the work that you guys are doing. And there's a couple of projects that we have in the pipeline with regards to Black Love. So I would definitely love to extend that invitation to you guys as well, too.
We would love to. That's right up our alley.
And that's right. Take the moment to one, just say thank you for allowing us to project who we are as a couple, as individuals, and also give us an opportunity to speak on this moment right now that we're in. That's such a historical moment, and the importance of one, November, and how important it is to really, really exercise who we are and our strength and power. And it has nothing to do with exercising the concept of a political movement or power, right? But it really, I mean, a political position, it really has a lot more to do to exercise our power, people. And because I really think people really haven't seen our power as a people in times of November. The other part of it is just a historical moment and how HBCUs are being illuminated, yes, in this moment. And I don't think we can really take that for granted, because there's a reason for everything.
Yeah.
And I don't think there's a coincidence that HBCUs are being highlighted in such a historical moment, with the leadership that we have in this country. And superstar athletes and superstar academic people are choosing to go to an HBCUs before they choose to go to an Ivy League. There's a shift that's happening, man, and we need to make sure we continue to move.
Definitely. And I think that this book is just one piece of that. I think that it's definitely shifting the narrative, and I think it's going to continue to do so. So I'm just thankful to just be part of that movement as well, even though I did not attend one, but I'm here to help, you know, push that narrative and just, you know, highlight the schools and the individuals, you know, who's graduated from them that are excellent individuals, you know, in our communities.
Yeah, no, we appreciate that. We really appreciate the opportunity to, you know, speak with you about our experience. So thank you.
You're welcome.
Oh, yeah, we want to definitely shout out Ashley, who is the co-visionary of the book. This is the second book that she's done with for A&T with the HBCU experience. And she's actually also my line sister. So it's been amazing to work with her. On this, I just really want to say thank you to her and you know, shout her out, because it's a lot of work coordinating, you know, so many different stories and experiences the way that she's been able to.
Definitely. Shout out to Ashley. Ashley is doing amazing work. And I mean, the stuff that she's doing, I don't, she has to be an Energizer bunny for that one. I thought I was busy, but.
Yeah, she is.
Yes, definitely. Well, all right, everyone. Well, thank you again, you both, for being on this show. And thank you all for tuning in to another episode of According to RP on WJMS Radio. It's your girl, Rita Pierre, your host. And as always, I will speak to you guys next week.
You were listening to According to RP on WJMS Radio.
About time you tuned in.
Tune in each and every Sunday.
Can't wait to come back.
7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
It's all on.